Welcome back to the Auto Amateur Podcast. This is James. Another day, another podcast episode, and another collaboration. Yes, while I spoke to Jay Reed last time, and I hope you enjoyed that episode, today I'm speaking with Andrew from 911 South. Let's go check it out. Yeah, so I came across Andrew's content because he was featured on one of Michael Bath's Porsche Cooled podcasts recently. And it turns out he's based in the States, he drives a 991, and not only that, he likes to mod his cars just like I do. So immediately there is a connection and I'm hooked and listening to his story. He's about six episodes into a series of videos on his YouTube channel called the 991 Build Series. He's just recently installed a TechArt Aero Kit, which honestly, I wasn't sure about from looking at some of the TechArt mods that you can do to 997s, which I looked at extensively when I was picking out the body kit for my 997. But looking at what it's come out like, oh my goodness, it looks so good. Front, rear, side skirts, he's gone all in and it looks tremendous. So we're going to be talking about his Porsche, we're going to be talking about his YouTube channel today, and opportunities for collaborations this year. Let's go get Andrew on the line. Are you recording on your side?
I am, yeah, I just started.
Okay, awesome. Well, good to see you. Hey, look, I'm really excited to talk about all the stuff that you've been doing on your 991, which I'm going to ask you about. But the reason I'm doing this podcast is because, you know, you're one of the guys I want to collaborate with this year. I'm loving your content, really enjoying what you're putting out on YouTube and Instagram. And I'm trying to fiendishly pull together this little concept of the Porsche collaborators connected universe, sort of like the Marvel movies, and I've got like maybe five or six people all interested in collaborating somehow. What it's going to look like exactly, I'm not sure yet, but it's just nice to know that the people that I watch and talk to are all interested in collaborating with me, and it's just another way to sort of push the envelope a little bit with this awesome Porsche culture. So I don't know if you know what you've signed up for yet, and I don't fully understand it either, but I'm just glad you're willing.
Yeah, I mean, this thing's a journey, right? I mean, I started this channel a year ago. Well, maybe a year and a half, to be fair, and I don't know what I signed up for a year and a half ago, to be honest. I put together, I think, one video of me time-lapse washing my 911, and here I am. So I'm all for a journey. I'm all for collaboration, and I'm excited that you're leading the charge, trying to get a few of us together to formalize that.
Well, that's awesome. And so speaking of the Porsche Connected Universe, I came across you, I think as I mentioned in our Instagram Live, from Michael Bath's podcast, Porsche Cooled. And, you know, I checked on his Instagram the other day. He has like 14,000 Instagram subs right now. His podcast is blowing up. I'm so happy for him because we've been sort of making YouTube videos for about the same amount of time, and he went into podcasting seriously about a year ago when he moved to Bahrain, and he's got such passion for making content and engaging with people in the Porsche world, and I feel bad for him that his 997 is on the other side of the world, you know, sat around waiting for him to go back to Australia. I love his content, love his podcast, and so I came across you, checked out your Instagram, checked out your YouTube. And then when I realized that you were modding your 991, I was like, this is it. I'm in. I'm sold. let's watch this guy.
As you know, I don't keep anything stock. Stock is not my deal. I respect the guys and gals out there that do, but I like to make them my own, right? And I need projects to keep me from getting in other kinds of trouble. So, I definitely do a lot for these cars.
That's right. And like my wife says, my Porsche habit is better than hookers and blow. And so maybe there's an equivalent.
Exactly.
So let's start there then, because it's one question I get asked a lot, which is why do I modify my cars? And for me, it's something to do, frankly, in a hobby. But modifying cars means something different to everybody. They do it for different reasons. They want to stand out from the crowd. They want a project. They want to make their own kind of driving experience their own. Why do you mod your cars? What's in it for you?
It's definitely a mix of things. You know, I think I'd be lying if I said it wasn't partially to stand out from the crowd. You know, I do think that that's just something I'm super interested in. I personally, when I see cars that are unique and people have done modifications to or put their own touches on, it really speaks to me. So I guess in turn, in my ownership experience, I always want to be one of those people. I'd say I tend to actually gravitate towards pretty conservative colors. And so I think a lot of the Porsche community, you know, the way they set off their car, if they're not into modding, right, is to do a PTS. I mean, that's become super popular to say, okay, well, I'm a lizard green guy, or I'm a, you know, signal yellow guy, or whatever that is. For me, first of all, I don't typically buy new. But I think that I just lean towards conservative colors. I've always owned, you know, black or silver or white vehicles. And so beyond that, I've got to do something, right? Because I don't want to be one of, you know, 28,276 black 911s out there on the road. And so, I do stuff to them. I also think there's a lot of bang for the buck. I talked a lot with Michael about this, but, you know, basically you could either buy something like a GT3 or an RS or a 2RS or something like that, obviously, or, you know, frankly, for someone at my price point, the reason I do a lot of modifications is because my price point might be that Carrera S, right? Or that C2 993 as opposed to the turbo.
Yep.
But you can still do some stuff to it to make it special and unique without necessarily ponying up the cash for that actual unique, you know, variant of the car, which is unattainable, frankly, for a lot of us. So that's probably reason number two, is just to try to find that blend between something super special and really cool looking, but also being, you know, just reasonable and realistic about what I can afford within the Porsche world. And then the projects. I mean, I am just that kind of person. I'm in project management for a living and global corporate real estate. It's just in my DNA, and I need projects to kind of keep me driving towards a goal. I get a lot out of that. I spent a lot of time doing house projects for a lot of years. And while I'm good at those, you know this well, you just did your basement. They're tedious. They are really tedious. And they're disruptive because you're usually working on a part of your house where you're also trying to live. And so the car projects are a nice way to kind of have a break from either house stuff, you know, or work projects, which, you know, nobody wants to necessarily do work at home. And so, yeah, the car stuff's in that vein. It's kind of part of who I am, but, you know, something really different. And I learn a ton. I definitely did not start as a person who was a gearhead or wrenching on cars growing up or anything like that. I mean, my exposure to the car world was take it into the dealer, you know, take it into the shop, you know, let them do it, you know. And so through the modification process, you know, I've taught myself a lot about how to work on my own car, which I find very frustrating in the moment, but incredibly gratifying and rewarding long term. You know, it's really cool to say, I now know how to put on an exhaust or change the oil or fix X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly the same. I remember the first car I had was a blue used 1990 Ford Fiesta. It had less than 100 horses, I think. I'm not sure of that, but it wasn't very powerful. I was just glad to have the car. And there were a handful of kids in my high school that had cars. Not everybody had cars. So that was enough to keep me happy. But it wasn't until I first went into my career where me and 50 other people were all given the same sort of awful maroon Vectra Vauxhall car as a company car. And we all did the same job. And we all were, you know, meeting with the same clients. And I think that's where I started to feel like I needed to differentiate myself from the crowd, even if it was just, you know, I don't even know what I did to my company car, like put a sticker on the back or a bumper sticker or something to just make it mine so I could spot it in the
parking
lot. Not
be a number. Yeah, well, that was a good example of maybe what not to do, at least in your opinion. So that was a very unique experience for sure.
Right. So, yeah, and I lived in New York City for a number of years and I didn't need a car. But then moving out to Minnesota 4 or 5 years ago, getting my 911, I had a Jeep Grand Cherokee at the time. And I enjoyed my, you know, going from a 600 square foot apartment in Manhattan to a 2000 square foot little house now in my terms, I guess. But it was a big house at the time with a 2-car garage. I loved being in that garage and just playing and wrenching and learning about the cars that I was owning. So it kind of started from there. But now I think it's just sort of similar to what you were saying, modifying the cars. It's a challenge. It's a project. It's gratifying. And of course, it's nice to feel like, you know, you've got something unique, even if it's just unique to you. You notice the differences. You know what you've done.
Right. Unique. Yeah. And not so much, you know, in the sense of just trying to be unique to get attention in the classic sense. So, you know, actually, we had an event this past weekend here in Atlanta, about 100 cars. And it's a good example of what I'm about to say. But unique, in my opinion, to drive collision and conversation. And so I feel like when you do have a modified car, even if it's modifications that are a little bit out there, let's say that's like an RWB, or, you know, people have a lot of polarizing feelings about, you know, that, right? It still creates a lot of conversation. I mean, it's, let's be honest, it's less likely that if you just have a stock C2 911 or stock Boxster or whatever that is, that people are going to be huddled around and kind of peeking in and saying, oh, what is that? What is this? You know, what's this seatbelt? Yeah. What's this caliper? What's that kit? You know, so to me, what I really love about it is when I go to events, a lot of people are around the car because they're curious, and they might like it, or they might hate it. And honestly, that's fine with me, because it still generates conversation. It's an excuse for them to ask me a question and say, you know, what is this aero kit, or what's this wing? I've never seen this before. And then I have a new connection. And that's really why I do this selfishly, is to make these connections, right? So I think when you've got mods, it's a conversation starter, quite frankly, at these events and things.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, so tell us about your body kit then. This was, I think you put out, was it episode 6 in your series, which is the TechArt spoiler and front bumper. I've got to say, I looked at TechArt when I was looking for body kits for my 997, and I wasn't quite sold on what they looked like on the 997, but I saw that shot of yours on Instagram the other day, and I was like, I need it. I need that body kit. That looks so good.
Yeah, I really like it. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on it. So... episode 6 is out. I've been plowing through some episodes recently, almost one a week, which for me is a lot, considering this is a total side gig and I have a, you know, full-time job. But 6 is out. 6 is the actual install. So 5 was the overview. That was a little more, you know, long-form description, verbal, so to speak. But, you know, worth watching. To your point, if somebody has a 991 or really any car and is kind of on the fence about different concepts, and I think, honestly, all the 911s have the same sort of options in some sense, in that they're factory kits, right, made for all of them, you know, factory aero, which on like a 996, 997 happens to look spectacular, in a lot of cases, very classic. There are, you know, what I'll call kind of retro mods, where you are taking parts from a GT3 or GT2 or whatever and retrofitting those on a car, and a lot of folks do those, and I shared some of my thoughts in episode 5, at least personally on that, which is, that's not my deal. And then there's aftermarket, right? There's 2, 3, 4 companies, probably, depending on which 911 you're talking about. The TechArt kit, I felt like, was a really good happy medium between kind of the more aggressive GT2 and GT3 looks for the 991, but also not quite as restrained as the stock aero kit. Right in the middle, and not a lot of people have them. So again, you know, I like to do some things that are a little more unique. I mean, I did that with the 993 with the wheels and calipers and other stuff. So I liked the fact, frankly, that I just hadn't seen a lot of TechArt kits on 991s. And it's a nice kit. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You know, it's 2 side skirts. The front lip, so to speak, is that just that. I mean, it's a 4 to 5 inch tall piece that goes right on the stock bumper and completely changes the look of that front bumper, as if you got a whole bumper. And then the wing is, you know, kind of the most substantial part of the whole kit. I think it's a really nice kind of happy medium between aggressive track look, right, or GT look, but not too much, because it's not a GT car and I don't want it to ever look like one.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was surprised that it was the stock bumper ultimately, because looking at the end product, which is where I started, I watched episode 6 first, then 5. You know, just seeing the end product, I thought that's a, you know, it's a brand new look. It did not look like a stock bumper with a lip on.
When I got my box from TechArt, I was about to hop on the phone and say, hey, you forgot to send me my bumper. I'm missing pieces.
Oh, really?
This little piece right here I'm holding, like, this isn't it, right? I mean, what am I missing about this?
Yeah.
It's a little bit deceiving when you get on their website. I happen to buy the side skirts and the front lip from Tag Motorsports, who's a distributor here for them. Great company.
Yeah.
When you look at the pictures and stuff on TechArt or Tag, you get this impression it's a full aero kit, right? Front bumper, there's a rear bumper. I mean, it's just so dramatically different. But yeah, it was wing side skirts and this little lip. And I'm like, I think there's stuff missing from my kit, guys. But yeah, lo and behold, as you'll see in the video, you know, you start to put that on and it's just transformational. Now, they do sell two very small sloped aero pieces for the front bumper. They basically diagonally divide the two front kidneys on the left and right side of the stock 991 bumper.
Yeah.
I decided not to put those on, mostly because they're really freaking expensive. They are $900 a piece, which is odd because that's more than the front lip together. And they're just tiny little pieces. So I left them off. I said, let me see what it looks like without them. I can always put them on and have them painted. But the actual little diagonal pieces are not on mine, which you'll see in the video. But you can get those. Gives it a little more of the aero kit front bumper look with the sloped kind of pieces.
What are they? Are they made out of platinum wrapped in carbon fiber? Well,
I thought they were made out of carbon. So that was my first, you know, kind of, okay, well, if they're carbon fiber, that would make sense. But I'm pretty sure they're not. I think they're just accessory pieces that, because tech art is tech art, they know, like, hey, we are the only ones who make this little piece, and it's custom fit. It's got little slots that go slide right over the horizontal fins on the stock grill. So, you know, look, they're the only people to make it. They know that. And so I'm sure that they charge accordingly, I guess. I don't know.
yeah, I guess. Now, how about the side skirts? I've never been a fan of side skirts, and I couldn't tell from your footage just how seamless they are on the side of the car. You look at the ones I've just taken off my 996, and they were just big, ugly, clunky things that bolted onto the side of the car, and they obviously look bolt-on. Hey, are yours a little bit more slick and seamless than that?
Yeah, they're very, very seamless. So that's, you know, what I tried to capture that in a bit in the video, and the lighting was a little bit challenging, but they are concave, okay? And so they actually curve in towards the vehicle. So usually, to your point, when you get side skirts on a lot of these 911s, you know, the whole width of the car at the middle really bulges out, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not really it doesn't really follow the form of the 911. And so these are concave, even before they're applied to the car, you know, with adhesive, they curve in. And so once they're applied properly, they're pretty seamless. They really follow the lines of the vehicle as stock. They just give it, obviously, a little bit of a lowered appearance. And they fill in, obviously, a little bit on each wheel well to kind of connect the body, you know, close down those gaps in the wheel wells, which is nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're nice. They're really, I'm with you. I had a aero kit on 996. And on the 993, and even this OEM 993 side skirts that were part of the AirKit 2 turbo look, you know, from the factory, were kind of just, again, your standard, like, rounded, like, 90 degrees, same width front to back, you know, and, you know, yeah, I'm with you. I think a lot of side skirts are lazily designed, maybe.
They look bolt-on. I don't know. I think it's just too much of an afterthought. You know, you look at the configuration tool for the 992 now, and they've been designed with that, I think, objective in mind. They want them to look seamless. Where previously there was just it was an accessory, it was a bolt-on. Did you have to reprogram your spoiler codes so that you wouldn't get an error code when your spoiler's going up and your fixed wing is staying still?
Yeah, better question would be, when am I going to get around to reprogramming my ECU? Because the answer is yes, but I have not done that yet. So yeah, you do, because of the motorized spoiler, which is stock right on the 9M1S. And so I get a lovely little chime and warning, which actually helps as a speed warning, because it comes up on my screen at 78 miles an hour. Okay.
Yeah,
and so it's not really annoying enough, because when I'm around town, you know, whatever, I'm typically under 78. But then when we go to these mountain runs, or I'm driving with the crew, you know, we're doing speeds that I won't share, it's chiming and it's annoying and it's in my face. And I'm like, damn, I need to get to the dealer. But you can only do it with the dealer. That's the rub. And so, you know, it's not going to be a big deal, but it's a $200 investment, right? Just because they're going to want to charge me probably $200-$300, I'm sure, for the hour and a half of labor or whatever. But yeah, you have to do an ECU program on the spoiler. Otherwise, it will tell you your spoiler's about to get ripped off, even though, of course, it's not.
Yeah. I had the exact same issue with my 997 when I put the fixed GT3 style wing on the back of it. My friend Scott has the Porsche Pee-wee's tool on his laptop. It literally takes 5 minutes. You plug it in, you select the menu, you flip the configuration to off instead of on. 5 minutes. If the dealer charges you for more than half an hour's worth of labor, they are having a laugh.
Forget that. I just need better friends with better software in Atlanta is what it's going to
be. You do.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I need a friend like that. I've got two good buddies who own aftermarket third-party shops here in town, and I'm fairly certain when I asked them, they said they couldn't do it because they didn't have it. But that's good to know. Yeah, so we have pretty good dealers here. I'm sure they're not going to gouge me if it is a half hour, you know, minimum, because it's actually 5 minutes, and that's probably what I'll pay. But need to get that done for sure. And then the third brake light, actually, so there's two brake lights in the rear of that car, stock.
Yeah.
And so you got to sort of decide which one you want to use first and foremost, because you have to move it from the grill. I use the engine covered lid back to the spoiler. But the challenge, full disclosure, is actually it hasn't been hooked up yet because, you know, the one thing I take for granted between the reprogramming of the warning and this issue with third brake light is, you know, I worked on the 993 for so long. And that's like, you know, idiot proof. I mean, it's all mechanical, right? I mean, there is no like electronics, you know, there's no warning about your spoiler. There's no wiring is super basic. I mean, anybody elementary level can wire stuff. So there's some finicky, it must've tripped something in the ECU when we moved the light as well, where it's not powering that rear third brake light in the spoiler.
Oh, really?
So it'll be a 2-for-1 at the dealer for them to take a peek at that and get the warning cleared out of the computer there. But yeah, those are 991 props. That's a little more advanced vehicle.
Yeah, as long as you keep accelerating away from the people behind you, you're not going to have any problems. Who needs to see that brake light?
Well, actually, yeah, full disclosure, I'm kind of a hard breaker. I'm a late breaker, so it's probably quite dangerous. I need to probably schedule an appointment. I have two brake lights, to be clear, but I need to do the world a favor and get that third one operational.
Yeah, yeah. So what's on the radar for 911 South this year?
You know, this year is, you know, I think more, well, finishing the build series. So the car's done. You know, you've seen the photos. I think you could probably tell from some of the static photos I posted. The build's done. The series is still catching up. So obviously, you know, push out the balance of those episodes. There's probably 5 left. You know, we've got some of the fun stuff. So the Cobb tune, you know, a lot of people have been asking about that. Say, you know, I really want to see that video because it's just not a lot of content. About user experience. There's a lot on how to do it, how to install it, which takes 15 minutes, but not a lot about before and after and is it worth it. So we got Cobb tune stuff, DSC controller for the PASM suspension is on the way. And then of course the Soul exhaust. And so some biggies for sure on the 911 build series. So kind of pushing that out. And then, you know, kind of a new project that I'm working on, or really just an iteration, is I have a buddy here in town who actually is in the film production industry. He's classically trained in that sense. That was a big portion of his career. So he and I have been talking about a collaboration of sorts, basically just to get a second set of hands. So I feel like, you know, the channel's at the point where it's got some good traction. I want to continue to bring coverage, especially from events here in town and within the U.S. But yeah, more of these build series, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then also kind of ownership profiling. Similar to you, I mean, I have a sense that you guys have like a core group, right? Your Porsches and Pancakes, you know, kind of crew. And so we have a similar group down here of maybe 15 to 20 people that are pretty regular. And we do everything from just casual lunch, you know, not even non-Porsche related, you know, where I think we're going to work on kind of a lifestyle, call it, I don't know, film or something like that to kind of profile the culture that's unique to this area in Atlanta. And so he's really helping out with that because, again, you know, that's the kind of stuff where you need a lot of 2-camera setups, all that, and, you know, having a second set of hands is going to really improve the content, I think, where we can be in 2 places at one time, an event, he can be getting B-roll of, you know, people eating or grabbing beers, and I can be getting, you know, drone footage over the Porsches that are parked. And so adding a team member, I guess, is the way to put that.
Nice.
Yeah, good buddy Robert, who's agreed to help me out and kind of help build the channel. So so that's where we're taking it in 2021.
Oh, that's exciting. How are you doing with your drone skills?
Okay. You know what? Pretty good. I mean, I put the drone up in a tree, full disclosure, about 3 months ago. And unfortunately, I had to have a bunch of folks help climb a tree for me. But, you know, I have a Mavic Mini, which I love and I would highly recommend. It's so small that it really encourages you to take it everywhere. I had other drones that were pretty large, and that was always the biggest hurdle. Like, I don't want to lug this massive thing around. The setup is awkward. And quite frankly, you're a little self-conscious because you're flying this massive thing around. And, of course, everyone's looking at you like, oh, what is that drone? Like, who is that guy? Like, whatever. This thing is so small and discreet, that's what its advantage is. Now, the disadvantage that I figured out at a few events recently is that it can get stuck in trees quite easily because it is so light. Mm. But it's also pretty susceptible to wind and things like that. So as the winter is set in here, in the south especially, you know, we get windier weather for sure in the winter here. And so I was just at an event last week where I got a little bit of footage, but not nearly as much as I wanted, because I actually had to land the thing before I crashed it into someone's car, because that would not be a good way to build community.
No.
And so it's almost a little too small, depending on the weather. But on clear days, it's awesome, and it takes amazing video. So it is easy to fly as long as it's not too windy or something like that.
I have sort of the opposite kind of situation with my Phantom 4 drone. I love the weight of it and the size of it because I get very steady shots even when it's quite windy. And it does pretty well in the wind as long as you're not hundreds of feet in the air. But it's so big that it is bulky. It is a pain in the ass to carry around. I'm not sure if you said it was, you got the Mavic Mini, is that what you said?
Yeah, that's the smallest one. It's like the size of an iPhone.
Okay. I think I had a Spark. I can't remember. I bought another one earlier this year, and I love the size of it. I wanted to take it everywhere. It was very quiet, but it only had a two-axis gimbal on the camera, which made for some pretty jerky car tracking. It just didn't look good at all. With the Phantom 4 that I have with the three-axis gimbal, it's always smooth. It's really cool. What do you have on yours? Is it two or three?
I want to say it is two. So it's 2.7K. So that's one of the trade-offs. It's not 4K. But, you know, I push all my content online for the most part anyway. And so that doesn't really bother me too much. But I want to say it's two. It does not have active tracking. It's sort of a weird thing. I think the technology is there for active tracking, which is, you know, kind of, especially with DJI, you know, kind of their hallmark, right? Is one of the simplest ones to do active tracking. But somebody did it has these pre-programmed scenes, I guess, where it does you know, kind of the pullout shot or a corkscrew around you or whatever. And somebody did some kind of hack online I saw where they did the corkscrew one on an eight, and you select a point for it to corkscrew, you know, up. And then they were on ATV and they started driving away in a field, and the thing moved. So like, I think it can track. I think DJI actually like just locked it out of the software because this is one of the lowest price point drones. So I think they just want to push you to the more expensive ones for those features, which is interesting, but it doesn't have active tracking. It is 2.7K. I want to say it's two axis. And like I said, it's light and small. The Mavic Air, which is the next size up, which either replaced the Spark or is maybe one size smaller than the Spark, is a good one. I've got a friend who has one of those, and that might be the best blend between size and stability. And I want to say that one is three axis. I'm not sure, but as you move up the line in size, you do get into those features, 4K, three axis, active tracking, all those goodies. But the Air is hard to beat. It is crazy small, and it's really fast to get up. And so, as long as you don't have any wind and don't crash into somebody's 911, then you're good to go.
Well, I've never crashed into any cars, thankfully. And when I do the drone work, it's usually in a very remote area for the most part. But I have flown it into a tree before. In fact, twice. The first time it just fell down. I had a broken propeller. No problem. Second time it came down and I cracked the side, but of the flight suit, the case, but that was repairable. Third time's a charm. I flew it backwards because I wasn't looking where I was flying, trying to get a 360 of my car. The only thing I could hit in this field in the middle of nowhere was a stop sign. I hit the stop sign, camera cut. It was just, that was game over for that drone.
Spectacular luck. Yeah, I was going to say, you live in a part of the country where you got a lot of open space. You know, where I live, there's trees everywhere. I mean, it is hard to find a place without trees. So, but yeah, that is one important piece. The two times that I have crashed the drone or almost crashed it recently have been when I'm distracted. And so I don't think people on the ground at like these events especially understand that, like, if you're flying that, you need like focus. I mean, I would have, I have people come up to me and they're like, oh, that's so cool. Like, where'd you get it? Like this, I'm like, trying not to be rude. I'm like, you know, if I take my eye off of this, that's when you get in trouble fast, as you know.
Yeah.
Quickly can get out of your sort of spatial awareness, and then you're done.
Right. And also because the battery life is so precious. It's like, if I'm gonna have 3 minutes of chit chat, that's like 25%
exactly,
15% of my battery life.
Yeah. No, it's you got to definitely be in the zone when you're flying one of those things.
So tell me about your Soul Exhaust. Is that your favorite mod so far in the 901? Or at least up there.
I think it is, and it's because it amplifies every other modification collectively. Yeah. So I'll explain. And I'm actually glad I did it last, now that I think about it, because I've sort of incrementally done these things, right? So I got new wheels, I got the lowering springs, I started painting the calipers, doing the belts, the kit, lots of aesthetics. Then we start moving into the tune and the DSC and these kinds of things. And so I'm changing the driving experience. All of that was really good incrementally. But I can tell you that in hindsight now, had I not done the exhaust, I don't think any of that would have felt as pulled together, if that makes sense. When you do an exhaust, for anyone listening that hasn't done one, it's the number one thing that's going to change the way the car feels. It's like driving a different car. I mean, just honestly. So I guess you underestimate how much of the driving experience is audible, you know, related to sound. And so, yeah, it creates a whole new dynamic when you're driving the car, and it's a constant reminder that you have a tune and you have the car lowered and, you know, all these things. And to be clear, you can get an exhaust and not having that done. But for me, especially with these new 9M1s, the cabin's so quiet, right? And even when you lower the car on springs, like, it's still pretty smooth for a exotic sports car. You know, all those upgrades are pretty subtle, and you could kind of, over time, I think, forget you have them. The exhaust, doing an aggressive exhaust, kind of pulls everything together to say, I have a modified, more powerful, more fun, more visceral vehicle. And so again, I'm glad I did it last, because it really was kind of the icing on the cake. And I have mad respect for the other exhaust providers. I really am trying hard not to come off like a Soul fanboy, because I know there's pros and cons to everything out there that's made, but from the customer experience with the guys at Soul and gals, to the craftsmanship, to just the thought process that was put into the instructions they sent. I mean, I self-installed mine, and I got like an 8-page instruction set with color photos and all of the collars and bolts and everything, you know, that needed to be around certain things were that way in the package. So when I got it, I knew this collar connects these two pieces already. I didn't have to guess.
Right.
You know, just that's little thoughtful stuff that I feel like a lot of people do not do. And then on top of that, the thing sounds freaking amazing, you know, and especially for a Porsche. I mean, I think they really hit the mark in terms of making that car sound different, but not too different. That's very hard to do, in my opinion. It's very easy to make it sound really different. I mean, you can just delete all the, you know, mufflers, you know, go catless. Like, that's simple stuff. You could straight pipe the car, right? I mean, that doesn't take a lot of ingenuity. What they've done takes a lot of thought and engineering to make the thing sound very specific and aggressive, but not lose too much of the DNA that is that 911 engine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't want to throw other exhaust companies under the bus as well, because there are lots out there that I love. But to that last point, there are quite a few out there that sound awesome, but they don't sound like a Porsche anymore. Do you sort of lose the flat six symphony?
I would agree. Yeah, it was interesting. This event we're at last week, it was very cool because two buddies of mine have two remarkable GT3s. I think both are Datus. One is a Irish green GT3 that's freaking gorgeous. with a lot of cool color accents, got a lot of gold accents for calipers and whatnot. And then, some
I hate that guy.
Goldish, almost the, but like light gold, almost like that magnesium option that comes on the like GT2s. So wheels, I mean, this Josh, my buddy, his car is pretty epic. And then Jose, another friend of mine, has got a Miami Blue GT3 that's spectacular with a houndstooth, black, white, and Miami Blue houndstooth inserts in his, I mean, and some blue Miami Blue accents. And so they're kind of like the competing, like if there are two kind of like more of the like newer GT paint to sample guys in our crew that really kind of like the top-notch specs, in my opinion, it's Jose and Josh. But it's cool because Josh just didn't exhaust, and so did Jose. And Josh did Dundon, so front to back, headers, cats, and rear mufflers, so rear X pipe essentially, and tips. So the full system. Jose did Soul on his GT3, and they were both at the event last weekend, and both revving and, you know, providing all kinds of great sound for everybody. And so I got to hear both of them side by side. And, you know, the takeaway is I'm still a Soul guy. Josh's system sounds really epic. The Dundon exhaust sounds, I don't know what the right word is, but it's a little higher pitched. It definitely sounds pretty racy. Not quite as deep, maybe. I don't know. It's nuanced, but the parts are made out of different materials. So a lot of Josh's stuff is titanium, the Dundon kit. And so that's going to obviously have a different sound. It's a little, I don't want to say tinny, but, you know, it has a different sound. It's thinner material. I mean, it's a lightweight system. But it was very cool to see, you know, two very popular exhausts, the Dundon Soul, or the Dundon valved and the Soul valved for the GT3 on the same spec, side by side. Running. And
wow.
So yeah, that was unique. But I was like, yeah, I'm good with Soul. Jose sounds great. I like mine, so I'm going to stick with that. But yeah, there are some good ones, to be clear.
And I'm happy to call myself a Soul fanboy. I am. It's just, you know. I'm also a Pfister FD Motorsports fanboy. And I think you can be fanboys for multiple brands. But yeah, I love the Soul Performance exhaust on my car. So good.
It is good. You know, I told you the one thing I would be curious about is headers to head or not to head. For now, I think I'm going to stick with the valve rear section I've got. It's a lot, you know, but we'll see where that goes. I get that itch.
So I think that's an itch that you probably should scratch, because it's well, I know worth
you have it.
Well, I know. In a similar way, like the exhaust. I mean, how did I go along? I did a tune, and then I put the valved exhaust on, and I didn't notice much of a difference. And then I put the headers on, and then from a sound perspective, I didn't hear too much of a difference. I mean, the sound is, I wouldn't say different or better. It's kind of just somewhere in between. It still sounds great. It doesn't sound particularly louder at all. But the throttle response is different, and the power delivery is different with the headers.
I know. That's kind of the, you know, that is the itch, right? I mean, the headers are the real performance upgrade from a horsepower standpoint, and from just a exhaust throughput standpoint in terms of, you know, resistance and path of travel. So yeah, I get that. You know, I do have the tune, keep that in mind. And so that is bumping the horsepower probably to a similar degree that your headers do. It's not crazy, you know, 25, 35 horsepower, whatever that may be. But yeah, I guess with both, we'll see. But I can tell you the car has more power than I need at the moment. You know, I honestly would say if you're a pretty competent driver out there, I really honestly say that the glass ceiling or the threshold of horsepower you can really use and actually need is, in my opinion, probably in the mid fours on a 911. I don't know that you need more than 450 horsepower unless you're going to track the car, because I just don't know where you would use it without getting into a realm that's very dangerous. I know people have turbos, you know, pushing 600 or even 700 some horsepower, and I wouldn't think it's usable. I mean, I've ridden in their car and they're up to a certain speed very quickly, and that's cool, but then it's over, right? So yeah, I don't, you know, again, if money's no object, do whatever you want. But if you're like me and you're on a budget, you know, I think you kind of get to the 400 mid 400s or kind of high 400s on a 911 And that's a lot of power, man. I mean, that's more than most people can safely use.
I think that's fair. And having just experienced whatever the Taycan Turbo puts out, and my eyeballs still hurt from that experience, no one needs to have a car that fast. That was just ridiculous.
Yeah, we actually had a Taycan Turbo S ride with us to this event last week. And the gentleman offered up test drives and that. We had a kind of a remote area. We did some photos and stuff. And he offered to have all of us drive if we wanted. And I declined because I've ridden in a base Taycan. And, like, that's plenty. I mean, you don't need any more power than that. That's nuts as it is. So I don't want to be behind the wheel of this dude's, you know, Taycan Turbo S. That's $200,000+ and end up in a ditch because that power is so sneaky. It's just, you don't have any perception of how quickly you're going as fast as you are. It's super cool that they can produce something like that, but yeah, that's beyond the pale of necessary horsepower.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Andrew, it's been great speaking with you. Thanks for coming onto the podcast. I wish you the best with the rest of your 991 build series. And I will say again, for the record, you should scratch that Soul Performance header itch. You won't regret
it. Well, I'm out of projects, right? It's done. And so you telling me that is probably going to get me into trouble very quickly. So I appreciate the advice. Appreciate you following along on the build series. And thanks for having me on the podcast, James.
You bet. Have a great weekend. Cheers, Andrew. That's it for another episode of Auto Amateur on this podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. That was Andrew from 911 South. Stay tuned with his content and keep following his journey if you're interested in modding cars and seeing how his 991 ends up. He's also on Instagram, same handle, 911 South. More content from Auto Amateur coming soon. We've got another couple of podcasts in the pipeline. We've got some videos coming up. Going to really start getting thrown into the content creation here in 2021. Now that I've had my couple of weeks of downtime, let's get back to it. All right, take care. Stay safe, stay healthy. See you in another podcast or a video soon. Bye.